My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
What's the best lesson you've learned about yourself in pursuing your dream?
That I'm absolutely never satisfied.
This is Z Holly. I'm in for Esprit Devora, and I am so stoked to have Rachel King here with us today, especially because what you do really is help people tell stories, and especially women and underrepresented minorities. So I'm really excited to have you.
Yeah, so excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Rachel King, and I've recently started a boutique communications firm for early stage startups, tech startups, and we're ideally primarily focused on working with underrepresented founders, women and people of color and LGBTQ. That's something that's really important to us, or companies who have a mission that supports one of those groups.
What does your company mean to you, really,
sure.
and what your company does?
So we named it Elephant Partners because elephants are, we're both crazy animal people. My partner's name is Ashwarya Iyer, and we're both in love with animals, and elephants in particular are important in almost every culture. They're really great communicators. They're altruistic. They're brilliant. If, you know, one of their herd gets hurt, they'll like all crowd around them, circle around them so that the predator can't get in. They're like wonderful communicators and animals in general. And
really they, good memory.
Too. Yeah, really good memory. Yes, very important. Of course, I just forgot that point. No. And then we added the extra L in. It's actually a funny story. My partner hates when I tell it. But the reason that I thought of that, we had made a list of feminists in pop culture that we admired. And one of them was Elle Woods from Legally Blonde. Uh-huh. So we had already decided we wanted to do something with the word elephant. We were trying to see if we put an adjective in front of it or if we, you know, how do we make it our own? And I just added the extra L in to make it Elephant Partners. And that's how it came to be. And then we chose partners as our second word because we're partners to each other, first and foremost, of course, but also to our clients, our CEOs that we work with and support and help tell their stories. And then also with the journalists that we're pitching, you know, want to be mindful of their time and their beat and make sure that the information that we're sending them is relevant and that we're not wasting their time.
Really good way of actually getting the attention of the PR reporters.
Hopefully. Yeah.
No doubt. So when did you start the company?
I went out on my own in November of 2015. And I was just, you know, freelancer at that point, a self-proprietor, if you will. I now know the correct terminology because I've had to file taxes. And then Ashwarya joined me in June of this year.
And when did you become interested in tech?
Oh, man. So I was actually back in D.C., I guess it was like 2011, 2012. The word startup was just really becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. And DC had a very small community there. But the agency, I was working at an advertising agency and we worked with a couple as clients. And I loved what they were doing. I loved how scrappy they were and how quickly they could move. I'm a very impatient person. So I love not having red tape, not having process in place, just being like, here's the problem. Go solve it and figuring it out and just like putting a solution into action that day and then seeing how it worked and iterating on it really fast. I love everything about that. And working with a small team that closely is really where I thrive. So I knew I was interested in tech. I decided to move to San Francisco for obvious reasons. And the first job I was offered there was actually at Adobe. So not a startup, but really interesting. And they had just acquired a startup that did social media monitoring and marketing. So I joined that startup that was being acquired by Adobe and was Adobe's social consulting arm. So we worked with clients like Levi's and Hyatt and Safeway, which was really interesting. And Adobe, if you want to work at a big company, there is no better place in the world. It's so flexible. They really let people like make their own schedules and work as you know, like it's one of those places where as long as you're getting your work done and it's getting done well, they're very, let you have a lot of autonomy, which is wonderful. But it wasn't enough for me. I still want even more autonomy. And I just, it's a really big company and I wanted to know that the work I was doing, like see the effects of it immediately. Again, that impatience comes into effect. And so I started looking at, you know, in the mecca of startups. So I started looking around and Sidecar was an Uber Lyft competitor that had sprung up. At the time, they were actually bigger than Lyft when I joined them. And so that was a really interesting year or two being part of that. You know, this was before ride sharing existed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a thing. It wasn't legal. I was part of the team that helped, you know, get the California laws changed so that it would become legal, which was super exciting. We worked closely with the Lyft team, who was really great.
It'd
Uber's
really
team
hard.
Less so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were just a little, they weren't as keen to cooperate and collaborate. But it was so interesting. It was such an interesting time.
It can be hard to be a pioneer.
It can be. It really can be. And now the sharing economy is like, oh, of course, there's a marketplace for everything. But at the time, that was not so.
Right.
And having a stranger like pop into your car was a very people still had a lot of hangups about it. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's now old news, but it was interesting.
Perfect example of how being first does not always mean that you're going to win.
No, it sure doesn't. But so I got really interested in sharing economy and marketplaces after that and moved down here to take the job as Dog Vacay's head of communications. They're a marketplace for like an Airbnb for dogs. So you can find a pet sitter nearby. And I spent 2 years there as their head of comms. And it was the best. It was such a good experience. We had an amazing marketing team there.
Oh, God.
I know.
So what's your calling? And how does this fit into it? Like, if you really had to sum up what's your calling in life?
I mean, I think everything that I've done is, as you said, about storytelling and helping people formulate. You know, everyone's got, there are all these incredible stories and a lot of people don't know how to tell them in the best way that will resonate with the public. So that's something that I really enjoy doing, helping people who are doing something interesting or innovative or, you know, something that will make the world a better place, really helping them fine tune that message and get it to the right people so that they can achieve their goals and have success.
How do you know that that was your calling?
I don't know. Let's see. I started, so I actually got into communications initially because I had my own blog back in, you know, 2006 era before blogging was cool and then not cool again way back when. And I really enjoyed it myself. DC had a really passionate small blogger community. We all knew each other. We all hung out together. It was a lot of fun. And one day at MTV sent me an email and they were like, we're looking for our first ever Twitter jockey, the MTV TJ. And so we've selected 20 bloggers from around the country to, you know, spend the summer competing in digital challenges. And one of you will emerge the winner and, you know, move to New York and work for MTV and get a 6K salary or six figure salary. And I'm like, sure, I'll give that a go. And I actually don't, I would have been the worst at it ever. So I think I came in like third place or something, but it was a really cool experience. And it taught me that this social media and content marketing was going to become its own career path. And you could do it not just for yourself, but for brands as well and help other people tell their stories. And so that's when I decided to do, I did a lot of like pro bono work, you know, some free internships around DC to get experience. I started running the social media club in Washington, DC, and which was a really active chapter. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a team of like 30 volunteers. So that was good experience in and of itself. Running a volunteer team is a whole different thing when you're not paying people. But we put on incredible events every month and finally had enough experience to get the job at the agency I was talking about in Washington, D.C. So that's how it all started.
It's funny that you say that you're not you're an impatient person and that's why you're an entrepreneur. Mm. But to really make it, you've had to really go through a slog and do a lot of different things. What are some of the actions? I mean, these are some of the actions you've taken to develop that calling and it just keeps going, right?
Right. Well, then you reach one level and then you look to the next gold star, right? And you just keep going and keep going. And if I don't have that incentive, then I'd be bored. And
so how do you overcome the challenges? Maybe you have some examples of...
Well, I think the challenges are the exciting part.
Yeah.
If you don't have the problem to fix, what's the point? I mean, a lot of it's just being scrappy. Like, I was bartending for a long time while I had a full-time job so that I had enough money to to live in the city where I wanted to live, but also that gave me a savings cushion so that I could then take on some pro bono work and be doing these free internships that I was talking about. And also just looking for opportunities. You know, my favorite bar in DC had terrible social media and it was the best bar. It's not there anymore. I miss you, Tonic, Mount Pleasant. It was the best bar, but they just didn't know what they were doing on social or didn't care about it. Also, no one had time because it's a restaurant. Your margins are so thin. You got to worry about the day to day. They really don't have time for that marketing stuff. Maybe you get lucky and the host is really savvy and you just let her handle the Twitter. But that's the best case scenario. They don't have a marketing budget to bring someone on full time. So I was like, I'll just do it for you. Let me. And if I, you know, if it works out well, then I've got an awesome case study. And if it doesn't, you lost nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And we started, you know, I'd promote their happy hour or their, we made up a dish called tachos that was tater tot and nachos and posted on social. And, you know, I'd be like, as long as you get me a photo or something to work with. And they started seeing people come in and anecdotally people would tell them, oh, we saw the tachos or we heard about the happy hour on social. And then you've got this great case study to take. You know, I used that then when I was interviewing at companies to show them the work that I had done, because it's hard to get that job, that first job, right? Especially when you're changing career paths or you're just new to the workforce in general. It's really hard if you don't have work experience. So finding scrappy ways to get it and then using those in your interview process to say look, I've done it. I know what I'm doing. Give me a chance.
So was there ever a point when you recognized that the track you were on was something that you wanted or needed to change?
Well, before that agency, I was at the International Monetary Fund in the legal department making binders and doing expense reports for the very busy and important lawyers. And listen, it was interesting because this was when Iceland was happening and when Greece was happening. And Dominic Strauss-Kahn, if you remember, was a very controversial president of the IMF who had a lot of scandals. And guess what? Our lawyers handled those.
Oh my gosh.
So I got to see some interesting documents. I could tell anyway. But it wasn't work that I was passionate about doing. Mm-hmm. And so while I was at the IMF, fortunately, we had 12 weeks of vacation a year because it's an international company. And so I used all that free time to do these pro bono things and be building up that, you know, my resume so that I could shift careers. Amazing. Not everyone has that luxury of a lot of free time. And so you might end up moonlighting a bit more than you want to. But those, you know, that's kind of the things that you have to do. And once you have that resume, then you can make the transition. So yeah, I think just knowing that you're in for 6 months to a year of pulling double duty, it's worth it though, to be able to make that transition. Also talking to everyone you possibly can who is on the career track that you think you're interested in, because you might not be. So finding ways to test it out or talk to people who are really doing it and can tell you the challenges, that lie ahead if you do choose that is really important.
But how did those life experiences that you had at the IMF and before that time, how did that really impact and enable you to do what you're doing today?
I actually think that bartending and serving was the most useful job. I was in the service industry for 9 years and making binders at the IMF taught me nothing. Trying to make 1,000 drinks at once, keep 8 tables happy, keep your managers happy, get all the money right, managing employees, all of that, doing that at the speed of light at a restaurant in a mall during Christmas season, that will teach you everything you need to know about working at a startup. So I hold that experience near and dear to my heart.
That's so true. It's so funny. It's counterintuitive, but totally. What's the best lesson you've learned about yourself in pursuing your dream?
That I'm absolutely never satisfied. Like we were talking about, once you get to one level, it's immediately, okay, what's next? What's next? But I think that's an interesting way to be. Some call it hungry. It could be impatience. I don't know. But I like that it's a constant motivation to keep going and do better and do more. The other thing that I've realized is how important women in tech are to me, not even just in tech, but successful women in general, surrounding yourself with women who are ballsy, with women who are collaborative.
Wait, why do we say ballsy, really?
I know. There should be a feminist version of that.
There is. We won't go there, though.
Okay. I can't think of a PG version. I've just become, you know, 10 times the feminist I was in the past couple years. And I think some of that's getting older. And I think some of that's the current political climate. Mm-hmm. But it's been really great. I know the women over at Call Your Girlfriend call it shine theory. Mm-hmm. If you shine, I shine. So surrounding yourself with women and celebrating their wins, because that raises all of us up.
Yeah.
Has become my mantra and something that's really important to me. And I feel like, especially here in Los Angeles, I'm surrounded by women who feel that same way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's true in other industries, but certainly in tech. Mm-hmm. I have really felt that. And I've very quickly here in Los Angeles made a huge group of girlfriends, both in work and in life, that I just don't know what I would do without. I'm so proud of them. I'm so honored to be a part of their lives. And, you know, that we can support each other and help each other is the best. And I wonder if this is true for like every woman at some point in her life sort of has that realization of how important women are going to be. But, you know,
it is funny, later in life I've gotten, I used to only hang out with guys mostly, yeah. You know?
Well, especially when I was bartending, that was, you know, yeah. My early 20s. And I'm like, oh, I'm a guy's girl. I'm like, no, I'm a girl's girl all the way. Like, I love my guy friends, but it's just completely different.
It's funny.
Yeah.
I was just having a conversation with my mom about Madonna's acceptance speech.
How wonderful was that?
Oh my God. It was very powerful. And I wasn't sure if she would like it because she's sort of been a...
Your mom?
Anti-feminist in a way, which is interesting. And so I said, I don't know if you'd like this. And she said, no. There's a certain kind of feminist, sort of the traditional feminist, that I don't agree with, because traditionally it's we can be as good as men. That's not the way to look at it. We're very different. Women are different in general.
Yeah, yeah. I think that dialogue has changed. Yeah, I agree. That's how it used to be. But I think now it has definitely become women are different from the men. We're also different from each other.
Yeah.
Whatever our choices are, like, it's become more about be your own person, and your choices are your choices, and whatever they are is right. Yeah. You know, whether you want a career, whether you want children, whatever is right for you is feminism and having the right to choose that.
So what woman in tech inspires you?
Well, let's see. I think Joanne Wilson is probably my ultimate. I was really lucky at Sidecar. Fred Wilson, USV Ventures, was one of our investors, and so got to know him, this is, you know, 5 years ago, and started reading his blog, and then discovered hers through his, and immediately fell in love. I love the way both of them are so transparent, and the way they appreciate the different geographies, you know, San Francisco, New York, LA. They spend a lot of time here in LA now. The way they weave their real lives into it, the way they both don't shy away from politics, the way they're partners to each other. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a fangirl for both of them, but especially Joanne, everything she's doing in New York for women in tech in particular. And I think they're trying to bring their conference here to Los Angeles as well, which I, you know, let her know I'd love to help out with. Mm-hmm. But she's someone who really, really impresses me. And Susan Line also in New York. There's a lot of female-centric VCs popping up in New York and here as well. Jesse Draper has just started one, Halogen, here in Los Angeles. And I'm excited to see more of that, because that means that more people will be investing in women-owned businesses. And then the profile of women as CEOs and entrepreneurs is raised, and there'll be more of them. And that's really exciting to me.
Do you have a mentor that's gotten to you where you are today?
I have quite a few. I've been really lucky that the last three bosses I've had, or direct managers, have all been really strong, incredible women who were all about, like, they took management very seriously and helping me become a better person. Like, well, they wanted to help me further my career. Mm-hmm. So the most recent was Carrie Bennett at DogVacay, and she's now at USV. I'm sorry, USV. We were just talking about them. She's now at Upfront Ventures, mm-hmm. and as their head of marketing and advising their portfolio companies. And the first day I got to DogVacay, I sat down with her, and she pulled up a spreadsheet that was like all the company's financials, this massive Google Doc. And as she's starting to go through it all, then she looked at me and she's like, and mind you, I'm head of communications. So arguably I mean, this isn't the first thing that I should see. But she stopped midway through and she's like, wait, you want to know all of this, right? Like, you want to learn everything about the company. I was like, yes, of course, this is fantastic. So just even from that first moment. And before that, Margaret Ryan was our VP of communications at Sidecar. She's been the most incredible mentor. I still text her weekly with questions about things and asking for her advice. And we get wine every time I'm in San Francisco and talk about career and feminism and Hillary and everything. And then before that, my manager at Adobe, Lauren Friedman, oh my God, she's the best manager I've ever had. She gives too much of herself to her employees. Like, I don't know when she has time to do her own work. You know what I mean? And she's since become one of my best friends
as
well.
That is one of the parts of being a boss and a manager.
It is.
I
actually hate that part, which is something else I've learned about myself, is that I'm not a good manager, which is, I think, important to know. I really love client management and relationship management and biz dev and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But managing people is not, I don't have the patience for it.
It's good to know your
strengths. It's very good to know. And my partner, Ashwarya, is incredible at managing people.
Nice.
So it's a good balance.
That's amazing. Well, you talk about never being satisfied. So what's next? What's next? So what's next?
I know. So we want to grow it. Certainly. It's only been 6 months. But bringing Ashwarya on doubled my income from the first half of 2016 to the second half of 2016.
Wow.
So that has been wonderful. And I'd love to do it again in 2017. And, you know, to do that, we have to figure out how to scale. So we have our first company offsite in January with all two of us. And we, I think that's going to be the main thing, is figuring out the best ways to do that and sort of doing our own marketing plan and our own plan to scale. There's a couple different ways we could go. You know, we could build up the company. We don't ever want to be a big agency, but, you know, anything under, I think, 30 employees, it would still be considered boutique. Mm-hmm. So that's one avenue. And then there's also acquisition, joining, you know, agency of some kind, like either a VC firm or an advertising agency who needs PR services, or just even a design firm. We've been talking to a couple who, you know, do all these incredible launches for clients, and then the clients don't know how to get it out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously something we could help out with. So those are some avenues that we're considering down the line. But for now, you know, it's so new. We're content to just keep building the business and be doing better every day than we were yesterday.
How can people stay in touch?
Elephant Partners with two L's. .com is for work, and we're at Elephant PR on Instagram and Twitter. And then I am at Rachel G King, RACHAEL GKING on the Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all of the things.
Amazing. I mean, it's really, what you're doing is so inspiring, and I think you're really giving back. You're really focusing on the community, trying to support women, people of color, and helping tell stories. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me
on the Women in Tech podcast. So all of you, to connect with other amazing women entrepreneurs, go to womenintechvip.com. And if you love hearing from inspiring entrepreneurs and want to dive more into the world of making and manufacturing, check out my podcast, The Art of Manufacturing. It's a behind-the-scenes look at how entrepreneurs who make stuff are trying to make it in their industries. Search for The Art of Manufacturing on your favorite podcast player, or go to makeitinla.org/listen. And I'm so happy to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Zee Holly in for Esprit DeVora. Thanks for listening to Women in Tech.
This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit DeVora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.